everybody. This is Again with This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 24, Ruthless People. And up here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello.
We have ruthless people to discuss, but first, we want to tell you what's going on our Patreon. Again with this episode 76, the spirit of 76, dropping December 17th. Let's watch Tiffany Thiessen in season 1, episode 8 of the new Saved by the Bell, The Todd Capsule. This is the one where Zach and Kelly come back. They interact with Jesse and Slater. It's like the most directly referential to the old show, but it's goofy. It's fun. It's on Peacock. We will link it in the show notes.
Also, we will be off next week bringing two Patreon episodes out from behind the paywall. Episode 53, Let's Read About Shannon Doherty and her December 1991 17 cover story. And episode 28, Let's Watch Jason Priestley in Dear Christmas.
Yes, it's a very, very holiday outing. And since we are going to be off next week, we'll tell you now that Again with This, episode 77, the spirit of 77, I don't know, dropping December 24th is Let's Watch Patrick Muldoon, Dina Meyer, and Ian Ziering in Christmas in Palm Springs, which is also on Peacock. And Sarah, just for funsies, go ahead and Google Patrick Muldoon Christmas movie, because he has done like 83 of them. It's crazy how many of these he's in.
Like, always playing Santa, I assume.
He does have a very Santa aspect. Anyway, we'll be back to our regular schedule for season 4, episode 25 on December 27th.
And because a little bit of December got rolled in with November for Again with Them, our digest recap of 90210 OMG, our next supersized Again with Them will drop in the new year. More details to come.
Indeed. All of that and miles more are at our Patreon, which is patreon.com/againwiththis.
The way you said, more details to come, sounded like really kind of spooky and scary.
It may be. We don't know. We haven't heard those episodes yet.
And when you hear them, you see the ring. Now you know. Those are the details. You're going to die.
It's true. This is why we tell you, don't listen to that podcast. We are trying to save your lives.
It's true.
But you should listen to this one, because we are talking about ruthless people. And let us begin with our, once again, E-plot. And it's not about Matt. Holy shit. Joe, Jane, and Richard are still wrangling. Joe finds Richard picking through the wreckage of his rained-out show in a tracksuit. It does not work for him. I like him casual, but this is too far.
Yeah, no, this is like some Polly Walnuts, Patrick Walnuts. I'm not into it.
So Joe asks how he is since he's been ignoring her calls, and he answers by reading from a snarky review of the show, apparently one of several. And Joe's like, onward and upward, but Richard sank everything into the show and now he's ruined, which, like, is everyone in fashion bad at business?
Like, I mean, and if it was a spring safari, why was it Polynesian? I continue to wonder as well. The sprinklers did not go off until like the all model walk at the end, as far as I could see. So since critics saw the whole show, like, yes, it's unpleasant to get sprinkled on, but the extras ran immediately at the first drop. So I don't think anyone was harmed except Richard's ego.
Yeah.
They saw the whole show. Like, the sprinklers didn't ruin it. Jane's shitty designs did. So that's what happens when you steal. Like, none of this makes any sense. Why do I care, Tara? Right. Why do I care?
Well, I think the issue is that the critics also, like Richard, assume that what set off the sprinklers was not a tiki torch from a saboteuse, but the volcano. And so it's like, look at this fucking idiot put a volcano in his show and fucked us all up. Fuck him and fuck his business, which, like, I get it, you know?
I mean, sure, like, you know, that's how I feel, but that's not, like, what I would derive from the facts and evidence, which, it's a soap, why am I asking? Let's move on.
Anyway, clip two.
Every time I look in your face, I'll remember that it was your stupid volcano that ruined me.
You know, you can't keep blaming me and expect to have much of a relationship.
Well, maybe I'm not expecting to.
I am going to finish developing the film from the show, and then you don't have to worry about me being a constant reminder because you won't have to see me again.
I really want to believe it this time. Like, these two are wrong.
Yeah.
It's not good.
And have been.
Yeah. So later, Joe goes to the studio to drop off her prints as promised, and Richard is still loudly being a dick to her in front of all her former colleagues, calling her his little Benedict Arnold. He just heard that Joe hooked Jane up with some of his cutters, which my impression from that scene in the previous episode was that they were freelancers. So,
yeah.
You know, like, this is what happens. But anyway, Joe confirms that she did. But when she won't tell him how many there were or who, Richard turns his rage on the whole office. Clip 3.
People, I've just been informed that some of you have worked for a competitor recently. Those of you who did are fired. So grab your gear and go. Get out.
Why are you doing this, Richard? Some kind of power trip to make yourself feel better?
Actually, those of you who didn't moonlight probably know who did. So guess what? You're fired too. In fact, you're all fired. Grab your stuff and get out. Move it.
You're being such a jerk.
Too bad I can't have the satisfaction of firing you two. But you cheated me out of that by quitting. However, it'd give me great pleasure to have you escorted out by security. Because as of right now, you're trespassing.
Ooh. Ever, dude.
Well, really. I love that she's like, you're being a jerk. And it's like, he's actually being, like, he's dissociating.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little scary, actually, if we cared, which we don't.
Yeah. But also, you know he's broke from the previous scene. So I guess this is his way of saving face rather than just having to lay everyone off because he can't pay them. Just saying. And the next night, Joe's looking at slides when something catches her eye. She goes into her dark room to inspect it more closely. And sure enough, in the background of a shot, she sees Jane holding up the tiki torch. Whoops. And later, Richard shows up at the garage to hassle Jane. He also very rudely sits on a half-unrolled bolt of fabric, like, nice manners, trash. But he's all, I guess you won. I fired my whole staff and I'm broke. And she's like, clip 4.
Well, I'm sorry that things are so rough for you, but it's not as though you didn't bring some of it on yourself by stealing my designs.
I saw your car outside and wanted to talk to you.
I was going to stop by and see you anyway.
Look, if you two are going to stand around chatting, I'd rather you do it elsewhere. I'm swamped with orders I can barely keep up with.
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea of why.
You know what? We're not going to waste any more of your time. Let's go outside.
Wait, all right?
No, Joe, come on, let's go. Please.
Oh, listen, don't you dare take any of that crap about good conscience.
I don't want to talk about Jane.
But she's the one who's...
Just hear me out, please. This has all been my fault. I mean, look at my actions. I worked my employees like dogs. I fired them without a thought. Of course it was all going to come crashing down on me. And when it did, I took it out on the one person that I love. I am so sorry, Joe. You deserve better than that, and you deserve better than me.
But what happened wasn't an accident.
I know it wasn't an accident because there's no such thing. I brought this all on myself. Now that I've come to terms with that, please don't try and tell me otherwise.
So, what are you gonna do now?
Figure out who I am and stop hurting you. Which means staying away. As hard as that'll be to do.
Richard.
Take care, Joe.
I'll be at the halfway cafe if anyone needs me. Slinging hash.
Let him go. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole thing about the Jane and Richard fight is that you're both terrible. Like, no, I don't care who,
yeah, I don't
who
either.
Is victorious. But also, like, when she's like, I'm swamped with orders, like, you know, I'm having a hard time fulfilling. Like, from what? In the last episode, you said you didn't have a show. Like, what designs are people buying that you're trying to fulfill?
Yeah. Also, it's not like everyone was like, well, Richard's ruined. Let's all call Jane.
Exactly. Like, it's not a zero-sum game. You're not the only two designers in the country.
Thank God.
Seriously. Anyway, that night when Jake leaves Jane after dinner to go back to work, Joe comes down to confront Jane about the sprinkler. Jane does not bother to deny it. And if Joe is trying to extort Jane, she doesn't have any money. Clip 5.
I want you to fix what you broke. I want you to hire Richard as your consultant and resurrect him in the fashion world.
Okay. I don't know that consulting for a designer who, again, just canceled a show on no notice is going to help anything with Richard's career. Like, what?
Yeah, especially since he drummed her out of his company, which used to be named Hart Mancini, and yes, he already was able to afford to change the sign. Like, that shit isn't cheap. Trust me.
It's true.
There are zoning statutes. It's, I mean, talk about a racket anyway. This is what we latch onto because the actual characters are so boring. And if Joe refuses to have any sense of self-preservation, that, like, what else can we care about?
Right. And I don't know where this goes, but I assume it's like to push Jane and Richard back together so that Jake and Joe get back together. And if it's not, it should be.
Yeah. Well, there's a death.
Oh.
That needs to happen, all but right. I'm not sure how we get from here to there, and I guess we'll all find out together, boringly.
Moving on to our D-plot, Peter and Alicia make another big move against Bobby. The Bobby shows up at Amanda's door, which, through it, she tells him to go away, but when he calls her out for being unable to say it to his face, she proves him wrong by opening up and repeating it from under the door chain. Just a reminder, she is under it because she's teeny tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And when she closes the door again, he fucking kicks it open. And I agree with the score. Clip 6. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. No.
Not okay. And she kind of cowers as she orders Bobby to leave or she'll call the cops. He wants to know why she doesn't believe him after everything they've been to each other. And she looks away. And when he punches the wall, she quietly says he's just like his brother. And John Enos III looks credibly wounded at this and says he's not. But by this time, Jake, who has heard the commotion, has appeared in the doorway behind Bobby and warns him not to hurt Amanda. And like, we all love Jake. I'm sure he has some dirty street fighting skills, but Bobby could pop Jake in his breast pocket and just keep it moving. Like, would not be a fair fight.
No.
Nice gesture, though. But off Amanda's look of terror, Bobby just promises to fix things. And when she tells him again to leave, he does this time. Jake asks if she's okay, and she predicts Bobby isn't going to let her go. And Jake has no answer for that. And days later, Peter and Alicia are at dinner. He tries to joke about her choice of wine, but she just glares back because these two are having a great time in this relationship. And then Amanda shows up because Alicia set up the meeting through her lawyer. And she presents Amanda with a check for the sale of Amanda's shares of the cable company, which if Amanda takes it, she'll be cleared of all criminal charges. And if not, she'll be on the hook alone somehow. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to begin to try and understand how, but
yeah.
Peter explains that Bobby divested himself from the company already, leaving Amanda alone on the board of directors.
Definitely not how it works.
No. And in that case, Amanda supposes this is a kind offer, but she doesn't know why it's for only half of what she invested. And I assume it's because the shares are worth less. Not worthless, worth less than they were before, because word on the street is that Bobby's a criminal. Like, you know, the real reason is probably crooked shit Alicia did, but also, you know, I'm no finance genius, but I think when your company makes news for doing shady shit, that means shares are less valuable.
And I think also that they don't even have, like, carrier. Like, they don't even have carrier privileges yet.
Yes,
like, it's a cable right. company that doesn't, that it's not like they can be like, well, we're the only ones who have TCM, so kick rock, shitbox. Like,
yes, right.
There's no cabling happening.
Yes. There's nothing, it's not operating. Like, it was established in the last episode, they don't have a license.
Right.
So,
and are not going to have one because gangster.
Right. So, shamefacedly, Amanda says Bobby really got her at both ends, and Peter urges Amanda to sever all ties, and without reading what she is signing, Amanda does. Oh, Amanda. Take this to your lawyer. for God's sake.
Having trouble feeling sorry for anyone in this plotline.
Yeah. So the next
Except
day,
myself.
So the next day, Amanda comes by Peter's to thank him in person for extricating her from the Bobby situation. She wishes she had listened to Peter about Bobby sooner. And then Alicia's there, snuggling up to Peter in her robe. And Peter invites Amanda to stay for breakfast, but she declines. Clip 7.
That was sweet of her to come by just to tell you that.
Yeah, it was.
Mm. Too bad she doesn't know exactly how much you've done for her. She did. I can't imagine she'd be so grateful.
What's your point, Alicia?
The point is, the closest you'll ever get to Amanda again is in your dreams. So start dreaming. Because I own you.
Couple notes. Actually, just one note, which is, Alicia, you know that he tried to kill her and they still got back together. So,
yeah. Yeah.
I just don't feel like this would be fatal to their future, but sure. Mm-hmm. If it's working on him, continue. But
yeah.
Don't get used to it, I would say.
Again, we must question, how good is the dick? Because it must be pretty good if you're going to go to all this trouble. You know?
I mean, look, he's been on a lot of soaps, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
He has. At the office, Alicia directs Bobby to sign some papers, and whatever they are, they'll take effect immediately. So while we all assumed Alicia was lying to Amanda in the restaurant before, I appreciate the confirmation. Shady shit. Continuing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby asks if Alicia did this for Amanda, too, and Alicia vaguely says it's all taken care of, and the DA's office dropped the charges. But Bobby is broke. That doesn't matter to him. It'll prove to Amanda that he's innocent, and that's all he cares about. And Alicia's hair, I regret to say, looks worse than ever in this scene. It is so cruel what they are doing to her. It's just
coat
brushed through. It's wrong. It's just wrong.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's in the visual aids. And when Amanda gets home that night, Bobby is waiting. Clip 8.
Prosecution's over, Amanda. This whole thing's cleared up. It's finished.
Please stay away. I have no intention of repairing the store a second time.
I gave up my company. Walked away from it stone broken. You know what? I don't care. Because I did it for you.
I'm sorry you had to do that.
Doesn't this mean anything to you? Why would I give it all up if I was a criminal?
Goodbye, Bobby.
Don't
arm grab.
Don't be afraid of me. Look, I admit I lost my temper before, but it won't happen again. I swear it.
Let go of me.
How can you not believe me?
Leave her alone, Parisi.
Peter.
Huh, so you trust this snake and not me? That's crazy, Amanda.
I said leave her alone.
Between me and her, butt out.
There is no you and her.
Shove.
Bruce!
Oh, my God.
So, Peter goes full. This is the reason this expression was invented. Ass over tea kettle over the
railing. Sure does. He sure does.
And but he's not paralyzed because we see him like sort of like vaguely moving as we go into the credits. But he's not feeling good.
Mm-mm. It's not great. Neither is Enos's very Boston accent.
The snake. Yeah.
Wicked.
And that's where we leave all these poor fools for now. On to the C plot. Kimberly is unwell in a whole new way.
Oh, God.
Okay. That admittedly kind of prefigures her Desperate Housewives role, it must be said. But anyway.
It does. But like generally, and you know, this is continuing to be true of Sydney, but is absolutely true of Kimberly and just Marcia Cross. Like,
yeah.
Revive the charges against her and write her off the show. This is sad. And only the fact that she is a queen has hidden it from everyone for this long. But like, you've clearly run out of ideas.
Yes.
Get rid.
Yes. Yeah. It's true. And but this is also the, we haven't even said what the thing is yet, but I'll just say it's like the inverse of what they're doing with Andrew Shue, where it's like coming up with the craziest shit they can think of and knowing she will sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus setting him up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beach house, Michael rudely asks Kimberly where his laundry is. And when she goes to look for it, sarcastically, she seems disturbed by a pair of red satin underwear on top of a folded pile, which I would be too, because apparently they're his.
Totally.
And apparently she not only folded, but also ironed them. And she only gets more disturbed as Michael cheerfully comments that she must have been up all night. And we may reasonably surmise she's upset not to remember doing it. But then Sydney lets herself in and Kimberly decides Sydney's messing with her. Sydney's outfit in the scene, it's not vintage, but it's weird. It's like a zippered orange citrus fruit print jacket that for some reason also has like a shaggy white Muppety collar.
That looks like it got rained on. And then there's a vinyl blazer. Like it is so, so 90s. And she also has that like sort of spit curl mid-period Christina Aguilera styling happening. That's just like, they literally can't think of anything else to do with her except be like, how can we... this is like another version of this. Like, how insane a look can we put Sydney in and still have Laura Layton manage to look good? Well, here's iteration 400. I'm exhausted on her behalf.
Mm-hmm. So Sydney denies rearranging the furniture or ironing Michael's shorts, nor is she trying to get Michael back by driving Kimberly over the edge. And this kind of talk makes Sydney think there might be bombs nearby. But Kimberly declares that she's perfectly sane and perfectly capable of satisfying all of Michael's needs. And Sydney thinks it would take an army of very sick women to do that, which is pretty good luck.
Yeah. Checks out.
Sometime later, Michael and Kimberly wrap up fucking at the beach house. And she worries that sex with her is going to get tedious for him since he's been with so many other women. But he says there are fantasies he would like to act out. Like, he's a plumber, she's a hot housewife, which, like, this is Michael. That's... very entry-level in terms of fantasies. But she would like to try it now, but he has a surgery. So she says she's going to stay in bed while he takes a shower. And then her eyes snap open. Clip 9.
Goodness. I'm late for the beautician.
Beautician, is it? And when Michael comes out, she's gone. And then it's days later when we see that Kimberly... who has now parted her hair in the middle and secured it with a headband, is in a puff-sleeved floral dress and an off-brand Tupperware party, which, like, you don't just show up at a Tupperware party. Who invited her? That's not how Tupperware parties work.
Yeah.
We all know so much more about MLMs now than we used to, it must be said.
It's true.
Anyway, Kimberly picks out a set, but when the saleswoman takes her credit card, she's confused that it's in the name of Kimberly Shaw, not Betsy Jones. Dun-dun-dun. And this seems to bring Kimberly back to herself as she says she'll take it COD and hustles out with several pieces in her arms. No one stops her. Also not how it works at Tupperware.
No.
Those are samples.
Absolutely not.
But Kimberly's concern is, what's wrong with her? And the next day she goes to the office looking for Michael, and since he's not there, settles for Peter and Sydney in her very nice black and silver floral suit. This was a look I liked.
Yeah, me too.
They stomp out. Peter makes small talk about her marriage, so Kimberly, trying to seem casual, tells him about the domestic tasks she's apparently been doing but doesn't remember afterwards. And noted psychologist Peter says he always thought her remarrying Michael could bring out the worst in her. She's not having unusual episodes, is she? She claims she's not, and just came by to say hi, so hi and goodbye, and she offers to talk, but she's already gone. Which is when Sydney lets it be known she was eavesdropping, of course. Sydney's view on this is, once a lunatic, always a lunatic, no matter how happily married you say you are. And it's a very boring scene, but it ends with the two of them standing side by side with their arms crossed identically next to each other. And again, them as a comedy team almost saves what they're doing for Sydney, but not quite.
Yeah. And there is a little spark there, too, that, you know, not for nothing. Put them together. It's a soap.
Seriously.
Help us help you.
Yes. So when Michael gets home that night, he doesn't realize the person waiting for him is Betsy because he thinks she's doing his sexy plumber fantasy. And when she doesn't engage with his advances, he guesses she's deep in character. And she tells him to go wash his hands for dinner, but he refuses since he says he did it at the hospital, which, like, then you drove home. Wash your hands. But he tries again to get something going sexually, and it does not go well. Clip 10.
What? What'd I do? What?
Stay away from your disgusting pervert.
Kimberly? Kimberly? I don't think I like this fantasy. Kimberly?
Go away!
Oh,
come on, honey. Can't we try the plumber's scenario instead?
I said, go away. Disgusting creature.
And then I could barely make it out, but it seems like he's like, what if we did this? I'm Babe Ruth and you're a fan. Did you hear that too? Because he's,
no.
It's through the door. So you can only kind of hear it, but I think that's what he said.
I mean, look, if what we have theorized about Michael's, you know, trouser snake and what is basically conventional wisdom snake about Babe Ruth's, yes, is like, I mean, it would line up.
All right. Well, let's put a pin in that because it's time for the B plot. Guys, the B plot is about Matt.
What?
I know. It's shocking. Matt is bummed about Alan's imminent opposite-sex marriage. For some reason, Matt is trying to do homework in the same room where Alan and Val are meeting with their wedding planner. Like, go in the bedroom, go to the library, literally go outside. But, of course, so we can see him seething about the whole situation. And instead of removing himself from the apartment, he testily pulls Alan into the kitchen to fight. Clip 11.
I gotta make it quick, though, because we still have a ton of ground to cover. Oh, by the way, flautist or piano player?
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Of course not. But, you know, just because the wedding's a sham doesn't mean it has to look like it.
It's more absurd by the minute.
Look, I know. Look, if it's any consolation, I talked Gloria into letting me take you on a honeymoon instead of Valerie. No cameras, no reporters, just us.
You're kidding. When did you do that?
Yesterday. So, am I forgiven?
Yes. But just barely.
Oh.
First of all, do not miss an opportunity to vote for a pianist, Matt. Second of all, no fucking way does Gloria allow this. Sorry.
Oh, God, no. No. It ruins her whole thing. Duh. But anyway, still, I hope nothing happens to ruin this plan. Cue the knock on the door. Val opens it to Alan's parents, to whom, based on their giddy interactions with Val, he is not out. Alan's mother is played by Pat Crowley, who also played Kelly's boss at the clinic on 90210. Mm-hmm. Alan's dad thought they would surprise Alan, and Matt is like, you certainly did, which is when Alan gets around to introducing him as his roommate. Somehow they've been keeping up the pretext that they are not a couple whilst living together in a one-bedroom apartment through a visit from a TV entertainment news crew. Right up until Mrs. Ross showed up and noticed that there's only the one bedroom. And when Alan's response to her question about it is to awkwardly stammer, Matt claims he sleeps on the couch. And as Alan leaves to give his mom a tour, Mr. Ross confides to Matt that they were glad Alan's getting married because they were really getting worried about him, har, 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 etc. Very mid-90s. Sometime later, David and Matt catch up at the hospital. Matt disloyally bitches about the wedding and Alan's parents. And if Alan forgets to consider Matt's feelings, David's around to talk and he gives Matt his phone number and address. Eyes emoji. Then we're at the church for the rehearsal and I looked it up. It is the same church that Allison and Billy were going to be married in, which we saw back in season 2, episode 26. It is also the church where Steve and Janet's baby was christened the church where Abby Malone and Bill Taylor did not get married. Okay. There's one other church that has also served as like, it was the not Kelly and Brandon church.
Abortive. Right.
Yes. But that is where David and Donna got married, according to the research. Moving on.
The historical documents.
Matt's hanging back when Alan brings him a glass of punch, noting that Matt looks tired, which like, just a sidebar, don't tell people they look tired.
Yeah.
It's not helpful. What you're saying is you look like shit. Unless you're saying you look tired, go have a nap, and they can. Don't say it.
Yeah. Also, of course he's tired. It's like, even at a wedding you want to be at / in.
It's tiring.
It's tiring. It's a lot.
It's true. And so Matt says it's probably because Alan's dad won't stop telling Matt about Alan's future grandchildren, or Alan's future children, dad's future grandchildren, and adds that Alan's parents are full of false hopes. Coming out to them would be kinder. Alan feels now is not the time for this advice. And again, I hate to agree with him, but like, he's right. It's not. The time was like last week or yesterday or years ago. But anyway, then Val and her period-appropriate satin bias-cut sheath dress stroll up, irritated. Clip 12.
I don't know about you two, but I'm really starting to max out on this whole heterosexual thing.
Same.
Same.
Add to the soundboard, Dave. Val also complains about Alan's overbearing parents. And Alan shushes her because here they come. And Mr. Roths hands over their wedding gift. It's a year's lease on a house in the canyon that they picked out for Val and Alan.
Like, which, I'll marry Val. Sure. I like real estate.
Seriously. But also, if they have that kind of money, why was Alan doing sex work for room and board? A. B. How has that never come up again? Like, how is that a one episode plot?
Yeah, it does seem like Alan is, you know, easily led into situations that he does not want.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Matt walks out. Alan follows. Matt wants to know where this all ends. Alan claims that Matt and Alan will live in this house and his parents won't know. Clip 13.
Until they come to visit and then I have to move out, right?
You knew the score. Why are you nitpicking at this point?
Nitpicking? This entire event spits in the face of our relationship.
Damn it, this is the first time I've had my parents' support about anything. Right now, they are crazy about their son, and this is probably the only wedding I'll ever be able to give him. So can't you just please just forget about your own selfish needs for once?
My selfish needs.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, you know what I do.
Oh, Alan. This is
I mean,
a lot.
Oh, both of you. Oh,
well, yeah.
America. Like, why does this have to be the situation?
Yeah.
Like, just feel sorry for everyone, except Gloria, who is terrible.
Yes. So that night, Matt goes to visit David at his place. David's pleasantly surprised, but he can see that Matt is wasted. And, like, he can see this in the visual aids. He's supposed to look at him and be like, have you been drinking? And they try to make Doug Savant look, like, bad. Like, he's, you know, drunk and, like, sloppy. But he's so good looking that it doesn't really work.
Like, it doesn't. Also, we haven't mentioned this, or maybe you mentioned it in an episode that I wasn't on and I forgot. But, like, they finally got him a decent haircut.
That's, they did.
It's not like this, you know, like, let's control the floof. Like, they just gave him a shorter haircut and it's cute.
It is. So Matt says he's sick of putting someone else's needs ahead of his own and he needs company tonight. And David lets him in. And the next day finds Matt at the hospital to exposit that Matt snuck out that morning. And Matt pleads early class, but David wants to know what's going on, which, like, you know what's going on. But Matt explains anyway. Clip 14.
Look, it was a mistake, okay? Look, after I left the wedding rehearsal, I went out, I had a few drinks. I got even angrier at Alan, and I ended up at your place.
What does that mean? It was a lousy time?
What? No, no. It was great. But mostly it was wrong, and it can't happen again.
Uh-huh. So you had your fun, and now you go back to your boyfriend?
Basically, yes. I'm sorry, I gotta go.
I mean, like, sorry, David, but duh.
Honestly.
Also, if they'll do it with you, they'll do it to you. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You can still be friends. Just don't get messy.
Well,
spoiler.
And or, like, again, spoiler, but, like, you know, ethical non-monogamy is a thing, and it was then. Like, have an arrangement, you know, like, where everyone's on the same page and doesn't have expectations that aren't going to be met.
Right.
Anyway, I also feel like you have to be paying really close attention
after
to David let Matt into his apartment. They fucked. Like, obviously they weren't going to show them, like, kissing or hugging in advance of, like, getting in bed, but I feel like they're very decorous even talking about it. But it's also not really cool of David to have sex with Matt if he could tell that Matt was drunk. Just saying. Over to the apartment where Alan's letting Gloria in to say he can't go through with the wedding. He knows they had an agreement, but he and Matt can't stop fighting. And last night, Matt didn't come home. And Gloria's very understanding and respectful and finally realizes she was abusing her power by suggesting the wedding in the first place. JK, clip 15.
And because of that, you're calling the whole thing off?
Gloria, I made up my mind. You and my parents are just going to have to deal with it. Excuse me. You alone?
Better ask your boyfriend where he was last night.
Who is this?
Because he wasn't alone.
Well, David, it's not cool. It's also not cool.
It's not, but like, this whole situation is so messy. I sort of respect that he immediately sure. went to DEFCON 1 and was like, well, mm-hmm. fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I also just think that David's been like, I just want to be your friend. I want you to help talk through it and blah, blah, blah. Which, like, if you had ulterior motives, and clearly you did, then don't put yourself out there that way.
Yeah. I mean, this whole character, it's unfortunate because I think they have better chemistry than Matt and Alan do. Yes. And this actor is cuter to me and less like breathy and annoying.
Yeah.
Than the other actor. But it's like, well, this is the only thing that they know how to do.
Yeah.
With the, you know, queer storylines is to have it be, you know, aggro or tragedy.
Tragic,
aggro.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, that's true. Speaking of which, then it is the beautiful soap opera wedding. On top of everything else, Alan made Matt be his best man. All the better for him to mutter about Matt staying out all night on the altar. While the minister completely eavesdrops on it. That's not just me speculating. We see him react like, guys.
It's so good. And Matt is being so... This is like some of my favorite dialogue in the history of this show.
Yeah.
So good.
So, let's hear it. Clip 16.
You slept with someone else, didn't you?
Who was it, David?
All right, yes, I slept with him. It was wrong, sorry.
That's to me.
Look, I said I was sorry. I was pushed to my limit.
Shh.
How dare you use that as a justification for infidelity when obviously you were never committed to this relationship in the first place.
One who's getting married, in case you hadn't noticed.
Oh, don't start. It's not nearly the same thing, and you know it.
It's just very good.
So bonkers, but like, Doug Savant's delivery of like, yeah, I fucked David. Sorry about that. Like,
you know. Yeah. So, poor Val looks like she's going to barf as she walks down the aisle. Her dress, I think, is one of the less bad ones we've seen in the Starverse. It's very traditional, but it's not ugly.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it actually fits her properly.
Yes.
In my envisioning of this, in which, like, there's an entire miniseries about Val and her life and times. She is actually mad that they are visibly fighting in front of the entire, like, invite list, and she can't hear what's happening because the organ is like, and she's like, guys, wait for me to get there.
So as the ceremony starts, Matt spits that he can't watch this, and on his way out, he hands his boutonniere to Gloria and tells her to be the best man. And he stomps up the aisle as all of the guests, like, stand up in shock. As I said in my file name for the visual aids, all of these people would be talking about this wedding, like, for the rest of their lives.
Forever.
Like, it would be the best wedding you ever fucking went to.
Oh, my God, yes.
So Matt is almost but not quite out of the church when the minister gets to the speak now or forever hold your peace line. Matt turns back. Val can't take it anymore. Clip 17.
Alan, he loves you. Don't lose him over this. It's not worth it.
Yes, it is. His career is a hell of a lot more important than a short-term relationship with a guy who's cheated on him already.
What are you waiting for? Let's do it. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here in the sight of God. Witness the marriage.
Okay, so the thing about shooting in a real church, which, like, it's a beautiful space, is that when Gloria is hissing at them, you can tell it is pin drop silent in there. Like, even if she's whisper screaming, fucking everyone can hear exactly what she's saying. Like, it's a church. It's the sound is gonna fucking carry. It's amazing.
It is.
Like, there's even a shot where it seems like Alan's parents can hear what she's saying, like a guy who already cheated on you.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Val, you could have stopped this, man. Like, you could have been the one to say, like, this is a sham. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not even implicated him, just said for his sake, I'm gay, goodbye. Like, we haven't seen anything about her parents being there.
Yeah. Or I don't love you, or I cheated on you. Like, you don't have to get into
right.
with whom.
Sure. But that's not what happens. And as the ceremony restarts, the camera like zooms in on Matt at the end of the aisle. It is dramatico. It's like,
really, oh my God.
Really
muy,
a lot.
Muy emocionante. Si.
Yes. I was cutting these. We were sitting in bed on Saturday night watching Taskmaster old episodes, and I was cutting these on my laptop because we keep it real sexy in year 25 of marriage. And I had to show that one to Dave to be like, look at this shit. Otherwise, he was never going to see it, and it was important. Now we have arrived at our A-plot. Billy 2, Allison's dignity 0.
Oh, God.
At the office, Billy and his new T-shirt under a suit look make small talk with Amanda for about 3 seconds before basically demanding that she let him rep 3-point shoes. She says that client is hers exclusively, plus she has something else for him to work on with Allison, Midnight Sun Vodka, which is its owners in the U.S. for the first time and getting courted by everyone. And Allison, rather politely under the circumstances, says she doesn't think she's the right choice for this one. Billy's ready to take it. Amanda tells them both to shut up and do the work that she assigns them. And when she's gone, Allison says she's ready to work with Billy, but she will not tolerate unethical behavior. And he doesn't remember Amanda mentioning ethics at all.
What?
And, yeah.
Shut up, Billy.
Mm-hmm. So then we see Billy and Allison in the back of the vodka guy's limo, ready to party in their work outfits. And the guy, whose name is Leif, wants to work with people who understand his vodka, so it's not great when he tries to give some to Allison and she declines. Billy says she doesn't drink, but she insists she's very aware of Leif's customers' needs, which, like, maybe more than others would be considering what her needs were at one time, vodka-wise.
Yeah.
Leif then starts hitting on her, and she changes the subject to the restaurant they're going to, and Leif bitches that he came all this way to experience the American lifestyle, but ad agencies just want to take him to restaurants. Billy mutters to Allison that they're about to lose him. Just a reminder, they're sitting 3 abreast in a car. So
yeah.
Leif would definitely hear that.
It's not a limo either. They're like in the back of a Honda Fit. It's extremely squashed back there.
So Billy then yells to the driver to take them to a strip club. And Allison is aghast, but Leif is all about it. And one scene later at the club, Allison, sitting next to a mud wrestling pit, stews while Leif gets a lap dance. And when Allison's gone to the can, Leif, having the time of his life, agrees to sign with D&D right after he mud wrestles Allison. And Billy says she's not that kind of girl, but, you know, not very forcefully. And Leif makes it a condition of his signing. So we rejoin Billy with Allison, smugly regarding her after laying out the situation. And she's disgusted and stomps out to tell off Leif, but he just grabs her by the wrists and pulls her toward the pit. But she pushes him in. And when Billy yells at Allison about treating her client that way, she pushes Billy in as well and says Leif is all his. And we exit the scene on sexy ladies swarming both dudes in the mud pit. It's keeping it classy. And the next day, she comes to Amanda's before work to snitch about what happened the previous night. And, like, I'll just say here, she's right, and I agree with everything she's saying, but, like, talk about work at work. Have boundaries.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that you live in your boss's apartment complex, you know?
Yeah. Also, I don't know. Like, it's clear that Amanda does not care.
Right.
So.
Well. She
just
makes that
wait
even more
for her
clear.
To go to work and then call in sick and then never go in again. But we'll won't be the last time we say this.
No, it's true. So Amanda, sounding impressed, calls the bar outing a novel approach. Allison goes on to say she was supposed to mud wrestle herself. And Amanda, kind of laughing, asks this, clip 18.
What are you saying? You want me to fire him?
Well, considering the fact that I was almost pulled into a mud pit by a degenerate, yes. And in keeping Billy on, you're only encouraging behavior that will eventually give D&D a bad name.
You know, in similar circumstances, I might feel the way you do. But this was just messengered here this morning. We beat out 10 other agencies. Midnight Sun Vodka is ours, so whatever Billy did or didn't do, It worked.
So, because we got the account, you're condoning his methods.
He's my most effective sales rep. I'm not about to cramp his style.
I see. You like him this way, don't you? Just two peas in a pod? Well, if I were you, I'd watch my back. Because he's a monster. And you created him.
So, why would they messenger the contract to her house? It's a work day. She's going to work. Like, have it at work. That's just a sidebar.
Also, I mean, in what universe is Billy fun enough to beat out anything except root canal? Fuck off.
Yes.
My most effective sales rep. My other sales reps are a bowl of cereal with no milk in it. Like, God. Show. Come on.
Yeah. Also, since when is he a sales rep? I thought he was a copywriter. But anyway, if this were the real world, the response Allison should have is to start looking for another job. So you can't stay at a workplace with that kind of culture. Like, workplace culture is real, and that's going to turn into a barstool sports situation, like, fast.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a soap, and we should all probably, all we should probably take from this is that Allison's warning is prescient, and Billy's going to end up gunning for Amanda's job or something else. But even though Amanda had seemed okay with the mud wrestling thing, she does stop at Billy's before work with the contract. Says she's happy about the work, but Allison doesn't love Billy's methods, even though she also kind of laughs at her again, and they have this exchange, clip 19.
Allison said that
she... Yeah, well, Allison's got to get over herself, or she shouldn't be in advertising.
Well, you may have a point there, but so does she. I've seen guys like you in the past, Billy, and I've outlasted them because they tend to succumb to their own ruthlessness.
Well, the only tendency I have is to succeed.
In part because you feel the need to compensate. You can't stop having a heart, Billy, just because Brooks stopped beating.
Give me a break. You want an explanation for my ambition? Simple, okay? I want more out of life than some lousy senior-level ad job like yours. Okay, I'm better than that. In fact, I'm better than you, Amanda. So I'll see you at work.
Just call his bluff. Fucking fire him. Like, yeah. Why would you want to move? Why would you want to work with this guy?
Yeah.
You know? And about selling out Allison, he was asking her to move in with him in the last episode. Like, literally. And I also would like to know what amazing future he envisions for himself via the track he's on, if it's not just to be the next Amanda. Like, if you want to work at a bigger agency, go do that. This is not
Like, you already got your double raise, but, like, what has that been, one paycheck cycle? Like, what exactly is the... What is the plan here?
Yeah. Also, Starverse shows love to double people's salaries as if that's a thing that ever happens. No. That was how they got Jim to Minnesota, too, in season one.
Oh, God, that's right.
Anyway, at the office the next day, Allison informs Billy, while weirdly standing behind him, you can see this in the visual aids, like, this is not how conversations happen, but anyway, informs that she's not working on the vodka account anymore. Which, like, I'm angry that it took more than one day for this to be adjudicated. But Billy's like, tough shit. I was planning to hand it off to you so I can work with bigger clients. But Allison already cleared dropping the vodka client with Amanda. So as she's leaving as Amanda herself enters. And with Billy sitting right there, Amanda asks Allison to call the shoe client from before to reschedule Amanda's meeting with them, which, like, Allison's not her assistant, but sure. And when Allison's gone, we learn that Billy has a whole pile of clients that he wants to drop. And of course, we find out the next day in a middle of the bullpen confrontation, classic D&D, that Billy went behind Amanda's back to take the shoe meeting himself. And now he is handling the account exclusively, clip 20.
Do you realize I have every reason to fire you on the spot?
Well, actually, you have more reason not to. Because on the strength of my pitch alone, they agreed to double their advertising budget.
Well, they agreed to $4 million per year.
Yeah. So now, do you forgive me for not doing it your way?
I can't deny you got results. Good work.
I thought so.
Fire them anyway.
Yes!
If they signed the contracts, then... Yeah. Bye.
He got the business. I mean, I doubt that after one meeting, they're going to be like, no, we will not work with anyone but Billy, like him. But also, like, if Amanda's calculation is like, oh, well, he's bringing in value for the company. Like, you don't own this company. Who cares? You're the one that has to work with him day to day. Like, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Well, and eventually, well, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Let really us close doesn't it matter. Out by naming our episode MVP.
Doug Savant.
Yeah. He had some great moments.
David, sorry. Love it.
I'll co-sign that. I'm going to also say Jeri Ryan, because even in this very small part, her star quality shines through.
Yes, right? I agree.
Every scene she's in, I'm like, give us more Val. More Val, mm-hmm, like you said.
Absolutely.
Least valuable player. Amanda, fucking fire Billy.
Yeah, agree.
I mean, I feel...
Next time on Again With This, the Kim Betzerly lights it up, Jake steps out, Alan comes out, and Peter tries to get himself out of the Alicia situation by whining. Get it? You'll need a full bottle of Pinot, get it? To confront our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. Or put on your primest headband and head to our Patreon page. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 MG podcast. You'll find all of that and so much more at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm disgusting creature Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is mud wrestling abstainer Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, should speak now or forever hold his peace. Talk to you next time.